The robots started off, the regular thudding of their footsteps, silent in the aimlessness, for the non-metallic fabric of the insosuits did not transmit sound. There was only a rhythmic vibration just below the border of actual hearing. "Faster!" yelled Donovan. The rhythm didn't change. "No use," cried Powell in reply. "These junk heaps are only geared to one speed. Do you think they're equipped with selective flexors?" They had burst through the shadow, and the sunlight came down in a white-hot wash and poured liquidly about them. Donovan ducked involuntarily. "Wow! Is it imagination, or do I feel heat?"
"You'll feel more presently," was the grim reply. "Keep your eye on Speedy."
Robot SPD-13 was near enough to be seen in detail now. His graceful streamlined body threw out blazing highlights as he loped with easy speed across the broken ground. His name was derived from his serial initials, of course, but it was apt, nevertheless, for the SPD models were among the fastest robots turned out by the United States Robots and Mechanical Men Corporation. "Hey, Speedy!" howled Donovan, and waved a frantic hand.
"Speedy!" shouted Powell. "Come here!"
The distance between the men and the errant robot was being cut down momentarily, more by the efforts of Speedy than the slow plodding of the 10-year-old antique mounts of Donovan and Powell. They were close enough now to notice that Speedy's gait included a peculiar rolling stagger, a noticeable side-to-side lurch, and then, as Powell waved his hand again and sent maximum juice into his compact headset radio sender in preparation for another shout, Speedy looked up and saw them. Speedy hopped to a halt and remained standing for a moment with just a tiny, unsteady weave, as though he were swaying in a light wind. Powell yelled, "All right, Speedy! Come here, boy!" Whereupon Speedy's robot voice sounded in Powell's earphones for the first time. It said, "Hot dog, let's play games. You catch me and I catch you. No love can cut our knife in two, for I'm little buttercup, sweet little buttercup, whoops!" Turning on his heel, he sped off in the direction from which he had come, with a speed and fury that kicked up gouts of baked dust. And his last words as he receded into the distance were, "There grew a little flower neath a great oak tree," followed by a curious metallic clicking that might have been the robotic equivalent of a hiccup. Donovan said weakly, "Where did he pick up the Gilbert and Sullivan? Say, Greg, he's drunk or something."
"If you hadn't told me," was the bitter response, "I'd never realize it. Let's get back to the cliff. I'm roasting."
It was Powell who broke the desperate silence.
"In the first place," he said, "Speedy isn't drunk, not in the human sense, because he's a robot and robots don't get drunk. However, there's something wrong with him which is the robotic equivalent of drunkenness."
"To me, he's drunk," stated Donovan emphatically. "And all I know is that he thinks we're playing games, and we're not. It's a matter of life and very gruesome death."
"All right, don't hurry me. A robot's only a robot. Once we find out what's wrong with him, we can fix it and go on."
"Once," said Donovan sourly.
Powell ignored him. "Speedy is perfectly adapted to normal Mercurian environment, but this region," and his arm swept wide,
"is definitely abnormal. There's our clue. Now, where do these crystals come from? They might have formed from a slowly cooling liquid, but where would you get liquid so hot that it would cool in Mercury's sun?"
"Volcanic action," suggested Donovan instantly, and Powell's body tensed.
"Out of the mouths of sucklings,"
he said in a small, strange voice, and remained very still for 5 minutes. Then he said, "Listen, Mark, what do you say to Speedy when you send him after the selenium?" Donovan was taken aback.
"Well, damn it, I don't know. I just told him to get it."
"Yes, I know, but how? Try to remember the exact words."
I said, "Speedy, we need some selenium. You can get it such and such a place. Go get it." That's all. What more did you want me to say?
"You didn't put any urgency into the order, did you?"
"What for? It was pure routine."
Powell sighed.
"Well, it can't be helped now, but we're in a fine fix."
He had dismounted from his robot and was sitting, back against the cliff. Donovan joined him and they linked arms. In the distance, the burning sunlight seemed to wait cat and mouse for them. And just next to them, the two giant robots were invisible, but for the dull red of their photoelectric eyes that stared down at them, unblinking, unwavering, and unconcerned.
unconcerned, as was all this poisonous mercury, as large in jinx as it was small in size.
Powell's radio voice was tense in Donovan's ear.
Now look, let's start with the three fundamental rules of robotics, the three rules that are built most deeply into a robot's positronic brain.
In the darkness, his gloved fingers ticked off each point.
We have 1. A robot may not injure a human being, or through an action, allow a human being to come to harm.
Right.
2, continued Powell, a robot must obey the orders given it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law.
Right.
And 3, a robot must protect its own existence as long as such protection does not conflict with the first or second laws.
Right. Now where are we?
Exactly at the explanation. The conflict between the various rules is ironed out by the different positronic potentials in the brain. We'll say that a robot is walking into danger and knows it. The automatic potential that Rule 3 sets up turns him back. But suppose you order him to walk into that danger. In that case, Rule 2 sets up a counter-potential higher than the previous one, and the robot follows orders at the risk of existence.
Well, I know that. What about it?
Let's take Speedy's case. Speedy is one of the latest models, extremely specialized, and as expensive as a battleship. It's not a thing to be lightly destroyed.
So?
So Rule 3 has been strengthened. That was specifically mentioned, by the way, in the advance notices on the SPD models, so that his allergy to danger is unusually high. At the same time, when you sent him out after the selenium, you gave him his order casually and without special emphasis, so that the Rule 2 potential setup was rather weak.
Now hold on, I'm just stating facts.
All right, go ahead, I think I get it.
You see how it works, don't you?
There's some sort of danger centering at the selenium pool. It increases as he approaches, and at a certain distance from it, the Rule 3 potential, unusually high to start with, exactly balances the Rule 2 potential, unusually low to start with.
Donovan rose to his feet in excitement.
And it strikes an equilibrium.
I see.
Rule 3 drives him back, and Rule 2 drives him forward. So he follows a circle around the selenium pool, staying on the locus of all points of potential equilibrium. And unless we do something about it, he'll stay on that circle forever, giving us the good old runaround.
Then more thoughtfully, and that, by the way, is what makes him drunk.
At potential equilibrium, half the positronic brains of his paths of his brain are out of kilter. I'm not a robot specialist, but that seems obvious. Probably he's lost control of just those parts of his voluntary mechanism that a human drunk has.
Very pretty.
But what's the danger?
If we knew what he was running from...
You suggested it. Volcanic action. Somewhere right above the selenium pool is a seepage of gas from the bowels of mercury. Sulfur dioxide, carbon dioxide, and carbon monoxide. Lots of it, and at this temperature.
Donovan gulped audibly.
Carbon monoxide plus iron gives the volatile iron carbonyl.
And a robot, added Powell, is essentially iron.
Then grimly, there's nothing like deduction. We've determined everything about our problem but the solution. We can't get the selenium ourselves, it's still too far. We can't send these robot horses, because they can't go themselves, and they can't carry us fast enough to keep us from crisping. And we can't catch Speedy, because the dope thinks we're playing games, and he can run 60 miles to R4.
If one of us goes, began Donovan tentatively, and comes back cooked, there'll still be the other.
Yes, came the sarcastic reply. It would be a most tender sacrifice, except that a person would be in no condition to give orders before he ever reaches the pool, and I don't think the robots would ever turn back to the cliff without orders.
Figure it out.
We're 2 or 3 miles from the pool. Call it 2. The robot travels at 4 miles an hour, and we can last 20 minutes in our suits. It isn't only the heat, remember. Solar radiation out here in the ultraviolet and below is poison.
Said Donovan, 10 minutes short.
As good as an eternity.
And another thing. In order for Rule 3 potential to have stopped Speedy where it did, there must be an appreciable amount of carbon monoxide in the metal vapor atmosphere, and there must be an appreciable corrosive action, therefore. He's been out hours now, and how do we know when a knee joint, for instance, won't be thrown out of kilter and keel him over? It's not only a question of thinking. We got to think fast.
Deep, dark, dank, dismal silence.